funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Who and what made South Africa the country it is today? While it still struggles with the devastating after effects of centuries of European colonialism and crushing white supremacy, South Africa has been ruled by its black majority since 1994. The road to true democracy has been long, bloody, and difficult. And even today, South Africa is crippled by high rates of HIV and AIDS infection and unemployment and low rates of education. The successes it has had in remaking itself can be credited to the enormous courage and sacrifice of both national leaders like Nelson Mandela and of regular people who found the courage to stand up and fight a poisonous system of valuing human lives according to skin color. So how has it come so far? Philanthropist and journalist Dominique LaPierre explores the facts in his new book, A Rainbow in the Night, The Tumultuous Birth of South Africa. Dominique, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris. Welcome to you.
What do we know about South African civilization before Europeans arrived?
Well, it was a few tribes, black tribes, but they were really almost nobody until the day in 1652 when 100 Dutch salad planters arrived at the extreme tip of the south of South Africa to really literally plant salads so they would provide vitamins for the sailors of the ships which went around the world in the race for the spices and who were dying of scurvy. There was no idea at the beginning of a colonization, of a conquest of the continent. Those people were strictly to be gardeners. But, you know, they belonged to a religion, the Calvinist religion, which told them that they were from a chosen people to rule, really, over the continent. So one day, they built some oxen chariots, and they started to move inside the continent. And it was, Chris, to be 3 centuries of an extraordinary, you know, a little bit like the American West conquest of those white people who really went into this beautiful land, but sometimes terrible because there were wild animals, there were tsetse flies. And one day, one of their children discovered in knocking a stone in one of their houses there in the north of South Africa that the stone was a diamond. And this discovery, you know, alerted the whole world, especially the British. They say, oh, diamonds in South Africa, and then they found gold. So the British sent an army, and this was a terrible, difficult war between the British and the Dutch, which lasted 4 years, a ferocious war, which was called the Boer War. And then peace was settled, and in 1946, it's only yesterday, 4 million white extremist nationalists formed the government, and they decided that to survive to the sea, to the ocean of the 22 million black people which surrounded them, they had to create a very special political system which was to be called apartheid. Apartheid in Dutch means separation. And this regime, short of the gas chambers, was as bad as the Nazi regime in Hitler's Germany before the war. 1,750 laws and dispositions were voted in parliament to separate the white minority from the black majority. And my book, A Rainbow in the Night, tells the story of this incredible 60 years, which really made of South Africa a cursed nation on the map of the world.
There had, even early on, been efforts by the indigenous black people of South Africa to resist this inward and outward expansion of white colonialists. What sort of success did they have?
Well, they had occasional success. The Zulus and the Xhosas, those tribes, really attacked those columns of chariots which were invading South Africa. It was really, you know, an epic in conquest, which I reconstruct in a rainbow in the night. And sometimes there were ferocious fights. There is a river there in which I swam myself, which is called the Blood River, from the blood of the 3,000 Zulus who lost their life fighting those Dutch colonial people with their chariots. Every night, you know, they would assemble those chariots in a round figure that was called a lager, so they would not be attacked during the night. But there were really some very, very big confrontation. And when you travel today in South Africa, when you go from little city to little city, you see some of the memories, some of the museums, some of the remnants from those terrible confrontations.
Beginning in the early 20th century, the African National Congress was formed, and it was inspired very much by the philosophies and the work of Mohandas Gandhi. And its early leader was a guy named Pixley Seme, a young lawyer. Can you tell us about him?
Yes. In order to resist the white supremacy, the leaders from the main tribes of South Africa assembled one day in 1912 in a city called Bloemfontein to found what was going to be the leader of the resistance of the black against the whites, the ANC, the National African Congress. And it's in fact a movement which was inspired by Mahatma Gandhi, who began his crusade to liberate later India in South Africa, where he's been a lawyer for many years. And this ANC was to be the flagship of the resistance of the blacks against the movement, against the white movement. And later on, in the 50s, the leader of this movement was to be a man who is today of the dimension of Mohammed Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi. His name is Nelson Mandela. Mandela became the leader of the African National Congress, and he led his black people to the resistance to the white. They only asked for similar rights, you know, because according to the white supremacist, those blacks could only live at the extreme end of the continent. They had no right to live in white cities. They could only work according to the places where they could station. I have in my hand, as I talk to you, a little a brown passport, which was called the Interior Pass. Every black people had to have in his possession this black passport, which said everything about him, where he was born, where he had the right to work, where he had worked, how much he had earned. There was even a page on this little black brown passport which said where he had the right to be buried after his death.
What kinds of strategies, Dominique, did the ANC use in order to resist apartheid and even before then, simply white supremacy?
They first had a nonviolent strategy. For many, many years, they just had manifestations and all sort of strikes and movements which were nonviolent. But at some point of their strategy, they realized that unless they would become violent, they would never get the whites to give them the rights for which they were fighting. And that's when Mandela was arrested with a group of his friends and sent in a sort of Alcatraz at the extreme south of South Africa and to research for a rainbow in the night. I myself stayed many days in that islands. I went into the cage in which Mandela, it was not even a cell, it was a cage, literally, Chris, where Mandela spent 27 years of his life. He had been condemned to life in prison. I laid on the concrete of that cage to look at the ceiling, to try to imagine what this man during 27 years must have thought for all those nights he had spent in prison. It was really something incredible. But when he was finally liberated, and that's what's so beautiful about this story, and that's why I call the book A Rainbow in the Night. Mandela, the leader of the black people, instead of calling all the blacks to a bloodbath against the white, he says when he comes out of prison, and now all of us, blacks, whites, coloreds, Indians, we are going to create a rainbow nation.
What do you think accounts for his ability to emerge from that kind of persecution for 27 years and have peace in his heart instead of vengeance?
I think because he's a giant of our humanity. You know, I've written many books about India. I've studied very much the case of Mahatma Gandhi, this little half-naked preacher who had been able to terminate the biggest colonial empire of all time without shooting one single bullet or exploding one grenade, only calling people to tolerance, to love, to nonviolence. Mandela is of that kind of humanity. And I think it was the luck of South Africa to have at such a difficult moment in its history, crucial moment, a man who instead to call for a bloodbath, called for reconciliation. You know, at the end of the apartheid regime, when finally a new white leader called de Klerk accepted to talk to Mandela, they decided to create a commission of truth and reconciliation for to enable all those who had committed crimes during the apartheid regime to testify and to ask for amnesty. I mean, it's something unique in the history of the world. That's why I have so much admiration for South Africa. But in my research to write A Rainbow in the Night, I was to, you know, find, to meet such extraordinary people who, in the middle of this racist regime of apartheid, had somehow redeemed the lost honor of the white people. One is a woman who is a sort of a South African Mother Teresa. She's a white woman, and at the risk of her life during the racist regime of apartheid, she had saved thousands of black children. She had built schools in some of the slums around Cape Town and refuges and dispensaries. Her name is Ellen Liberman. She's one of the unknown heroes of our humanity.
We will hear more about Helen Lieberman's story in just a moment. My guest this hour is journalist and philanthropist Dominique LaPierre. His new book is called A Rainbow in the Night, The Tumultuous Birth of South Africa. We would love for you to join the conversation, whether you want to make a comment or ask a question. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. As always, you can also reach us via email. That address is think@kera.org. If you would like to learn more about Dominique LaPierre's philanthropist organization, you can go to cityofjoyaid.org. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Thank you.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your life and your career with hundreds of non-credit courses. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Dominique LaPierre. His new book is called A Rainbow in the Night, The Tumultuous Birth of South Africa. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's talk a little bit more about Helen Lieberman, Dominique. She is a white South African, and I know that you have met her. How was her attitude toward her African neighbors so different from those of other whites around her?
Well, you know, it's an extraordinary story, the story of Helen Lieberman. One day somebody asked me, Dominique, do you want to meet a South African Mother Teresa? And I had worked a lot in India with Mother Teresa, the real one, so I took a plane immediately for Cape Town, and I met this white woman who was a speech therapist. And during the regime of apartheid, this racist regime, you have to appreciate what Helen Lieberman was about to do. You have really to understand what horrible regime this racist regime of apartheid was. They even had a doctor who was inventing toxic substance that they would put in cigarettes and in the beer and the chocolate sold to the black people to eliminate the black race. Well, this white woman, who was the wife of an affluent lawyer from Cape Town, one day was treating in the hospital where she was working a young boy, very young, it was maybe 2 years old, who had been operated of the cleft palate. And at some point, she said to the nurse who was there, you must give this boy IV all the time, otherwise he's going to be dehydrated, he's going to die. And Helen Lieberman went away for a few hours, and when she came back, the little boy had disappeared, and she didn't know where he was, and nobody would tell her if he had died or if he had been discharged and sent back to his slum. Finally, she discovered that he had been sent back with his mother to the township, a sort of slum on the fringe of Cape Town, and she knew that he was going to die if he immediately would not be given IV drops to hydrate his poor body. So this woman, this white woman, would take her car in the middle of the night and drive into that black township. Now, this was an incredible gesture. Never a white woman had entered that township of Langa. She could have been killed by the white police, or she could have been killed by the black people who thought she was doing a provocation. But she found the little boy in one of the hovels there. She took him in her arms and brought him back to the hospital, and she saved him. And from that day, Helen Lieberman was going to save thousands of black children during this terrible regime of apartheid. She, you know, in a sense, redeemed the honor of the lost honor of the whites of that time, like Christian Barnard, a doctor who dared one day to transplant a black heart into a white chest. This was an incredible challenge, defiance to the regime which had decided to separate completely the whites from the blacks with 1,750 laws. And in my book, A Rainbow in the Night, I reconstruct those incredible destinies. There were cases, you know, when white girls would be in love with black people. What happened to them was really an incredible epic of courage and love.
The Christian Barnard story is also fascinating when you consider the perspective of the family of the donor, this young black man who was killed in an accident and were willing to give his heart to a white person who, at least as a symbol of an entire race, had really subjugated
them. This was an unbelievable gesture to do that in the middle of apartheid. Did you know, Chris, that on the bottles of blood that you could be transfused in a hospital, you had a little notice which said, this blood comes from a black man or a white man. And if you were a white person, even about to die, and you needed a transfusion, you could refuse it. Refuse this transfusion if you knew that the bottle of blood that they would be offering was coming from a black man or a black woman. This was really times you cannot imagine. You know, at some point in some of the cities or villages, there were people, white people, who would say of someone, this person is not a white person, like she likes to make it believe. And then there was somebody from the racial commission who would come and try to really investigate, look at the eyes, look at the nails, look at everything. And finally, when they could not determine really if this person accused not to be completely white had some black blood, they would do what they called the pencil test. That meant that they would put in the hair of this person a pencil. If the pencil would fall on the ground immediately, this was the proof that the person in question was white. But if the pencil remained in the hair on the top of the head, that meant that somehow this person had some black blood. And you know, millions of people would change color because of this pencil's test, which was really a devilish invention.
Dominique LaPierre is my guest. His new book is called A Rainbow in the Night, The Tumultuous Birth of South Africa. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. We'll speak first with Sam in Dallas. Hello, Sam.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to go back to an earlier question you asked Dominique LaPierre about the tactics that the ANC used to fight against apartheid. And it seemed as though he was glossing over a lot of the violence that went on, not only the bombings against whites, but the violence within the townships themselves. So if you could possibly talk more about that, that'd be great. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call. Do you want to address that?
Yes, the black people were organized. And under the leadership of men like Nelson Mandela, they incurred in many occasions in violence to try to get what they wanted, the equality of rights from the white people. But as the white people wouldn't give it to them, they resorted to violence. And there were assassinations, there were cases where houses were destroyed, railways were blown up. But then the white police organized itself in such a very extraordinary way that they slowly and slowly prevented this violence to spread. And this was the occasion of many arrests and really many violence from the white against the black people. And during this period, that Mandela was arrested with all his supporters, and there was a huge trial in Pretoria. Everybody thought that they were going to be condemned to be hanged to death penalty, but finally a judge condemned Mandela and his friends to life imprisonment. And you know, Chris, something extraordinary. We were talking about Mandela just a moment ago and about his quality, his human quality to ask for reconciliation after 27 years in jail. When Mandela was inaugurated first president of a free South Africa, there was a huge ceremony in Pretoria. And do you know who Mandela had invited as his guest, personal guest. They were sitting in the front row in front of him when he was making his speech, and there were so many heads of states in that huge hall. Well, he had invited the judge and the prosecutor who had sent him for life imprisonment 27 years before.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to Jim in Dallas. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Actually, my question, I think, was answered by the in the callers before. But I did have another question. I guess going back to the question of violence with the ANC, I was a missionary in South Africa from 1992 to 1994, and I lived almost primarily in townships around the Johannesburg area.
What an amazing time to be there.
Yes, it was a very violent time.
I presume in Soweto.
I lived in Tembisa and Davyton, yeah, which is outside of Johannesburg.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I saw with the stayaways, when the ANC would have all the black people stay home from work to show that they could shut the country down if they wanted to, those people that didn't cooperate or weren't able to stay away from work because they would lose their jobs, often would come home and find their houses burned or members of their family beat up or killed. And on several occasions, I actually witnessed ANC members doing this to people. And I think that, and I'm not downplaying the racist factor of the white element, but I think that it was disturbing to me to see how the ANC enforced what they wanted to have happen. Do you have any comments to that? And I can take it off here.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, that it was a both-way tactics, and that those violence were from all sides. But for me, you know, what is really extraordinary is that those 60 years of this regime of apartheid, of separation, the fact that after so much violence, so many crimes committed, so many injustice inflicted, there was no bloodbath to finally, you know, at the very end of this, is something absolutely unique in the history of mankind. And I can only, I can really see that it was because of the soul, of the greatness of this man, Nelson Mandela. I mean, he is really a giant of humanity. I put him exactly on the same level than Mahatma Gandhi. Yesterday, I read an article by saying that Clint Eastwood, who has just made a film called Invictus, with about Nelson Mandela.
Right, with Morgan Freeman and Matt Damon.
Right, and he said Mandela can be compared to Jesus Christ. And really, that was the luck of this great country to have such a man at such a crucial, crucial moment.
Dominique, 15 years into majority rule in South Africa, how well do white and black South Africans understand each other and themselves?
Well, I think that there is no more really racism per se today in South Africa. But South Africa is a country like many other countries in the world. It has lots of problems. You enumerated a few of them at the beginning of your introduction when you said South Africa had AIDS. Almost 20% of the South Africans are touched by the HIV virus. There are problems of poverty. There are problems of unemployment. And when we read in our newspapers that some violence has erupted here and there in South Africa, most of the time it's a violence between black people, like people from Zimbabwe, who are not as favorable in their country or as have no employment possibility, come to South Africa to try to find a job. And then the local South Africans try to expel them. And this is the occasion of violence. So I think that at the occasion of the World Football Cup, which is coming up on June 11th, and who's really putting South Africa on the maps of the world, I think the South Africans are undertaking a huge, gigantic effort to try to erase some of their of the problems that they have in their great country. And I really feel so happy to have written this book. You know, A Rainbow in the Night. I've written other books like East Paris Burning, Old Jerusalem, Freedom at Midnight about India, and talking about Old Jerusalem, for instance, which is the story of the birth of the State of Israel, which is has been a huge bestseller. Sometimes I say to me, what a pity that in this cherished part of the world, the Middle East, Israel, Palestine, there is no Mandela today. A man with a vision who could solve the problem. So I am so happy with the Rainbow in the Night to have paid a great tribute to this country. The book has been an enormous bestseller in Europe, and it's just now come out in America. And I want to tell you, Chris, if you let me do it, that the royalties of this book is going to humanitarian action that I support in India, in Africa, and in South America, with the royalties of one single copy of A Rainbow in the Night. I can feed for 10 days 8 leper children in the slum of Calcutta. So I think at the occasion of Christmas, it's maybe an occasion to share.
Dominique LaPierre is my guest. We'll go on the phones next to Jason in Arlington. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Mr. LaPierre. I'm finding this show particularly fascinating, and I have one quick comment and then a question. The pencil test almost sounds like the shibboleth test of the United States during the wars. It's quite fascinating. And the second question is, why has it taken so long for these fascinating stories to come out? And why hasn't the media been all over it all these years?
Yeah, well, because there was maybe no writer or no journalist tempted to tell the stories. And with my good wife, we spent 3 years in South Africa to put together all those stories, to meet all those people, people like this Ellen Liberman, or the memories of these people like Chris Barnard and so many others. And I can tell you that sometimes it was a difficult piece of research. You know, when you find yourself among the tsetse flies of the bush, or when, like it happened to us one morning, almost two lions almost took us for their breakfast, it is not always easy to research in those sort of countries or places. But finally, it is so fascinating, you know, to discover all those stories and put them together to build this epic, which is really an epic, A Rainbow in the Night, because Nelson Mandela is the end.
Dominique, let me stop you right there. We need to take a quick break. My guest is Dominique LaPierre. The new book is A Rainbow in the Night, The Tumultuous Birth of South Africa. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your life and your career with hundreds of non-credit courses. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist and philanthropist Dominique LaPierre. His new book is called A Rainbow in the Night, The Tumultuous Birth of South Africa. And before the break, Dominique, I think you were going to tell us about the inspiration for your title, which comes, in fact, from former President Mandela.
Yes, because President Mandela, Nelson Mandela, was one day incarcerated in a jail, a sort of Alcatraz at the extreme tip of South Africa. He was only 44 years old, and he was condemned to life imprisonment. And I, to write A Rainbow in the Night, really reconstructed what had been the ordeal of that man in that jail, because the white regime tried to break him by all possible means. He had just been married before he was put in jail, and he loved his wife, Winnie. And those white racist people, they tried to make him believe that his wife was having affairs with all sort of men. I mean, they were going trying to break him by any possible way. And yet Mandela, when he arrived in his jail of Robben Island at the extreme south of South Africa, had told all his comrades who had been put in prison with him, boys, we are going to make of this jail a university. And for 27 years, he had transformed this penitentiary into a university to teach the others in prisons with him who did not have his culture, his political past. He was a lawyer. And this was an extraordinary, really, ordeal turned into a sort of feast. And when Mandela, after 27 years, is finally freed because the white government understands that they cannot go on with this separatist, racist regime of apartheid, that somehow they have to make peace with the black people, Mandela comes out of jail. And there are hundreds of thousands of people waiting for him. And at this point, this man who had suffered so much for 27 years could have called the white people who were claiming him, you know, now we are going to go for vengeance. We are going to make the white pay for what they did. Instead of that, he says, and all of us now, blacks, whites, Indians, colored, we are going to create a rainbow nation. And that's why I call my book A Rainbow in the Night, because I think this cry to call for a rainbow nation where all men would be equal, where there would be no vengeance, where there would be no bloodbath, is perhaps one of the most beautiful calls ever received in the history of humanity.
Our number is 800-933-5372. We'll go next to Sipo in Mesquite. Hi, Sipo.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, Mr. LePierre, I thank you for what you have done. I mean, I'm from South Africa, and I've been here for 14 years now, living in the United States. These are two countries I love, United States and South Africa.
Oh, wonderful.
So they believe in humanity. They believe in human rights. They believe that everybody's got freedom. So my question to you is, those brothers and white brothers and sisters who left South Africa after we got independence, do you think that they will ever come back, or do they have to come back? I don't know. You have to build up the country.
You mean, I didn't understand very well your question. You asking me if I believe what?
He was asking if you think that the whites who left South Africa after the end of apartheid will ever return.
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, the whites have stayed in South Africa. You still have several millions of whites in South Africa. And I think now the racist atmosphere that existed during the time of apartheid has disappeared. Of course, you have rich people and you have poor people, but you also have rich blacks and poor blacks. And the differences are between, really, the richest, the standard of living of the communities. But it's no longer, I feel, a matter of color. And when you read these extraordinary testimonies of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which were held during 2 years at the initiative of Archbishop Tutu, Nobel Prize Tutu, you really realize what has happened during those years of apartheid, and that people could come in front of a commission and tell about their crimes and finally ask for amnesty and be forgiven is something absolutely unique, I think, in the history of countries. There's only one man who has always refused to appear in the front of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and that man is a doctor, this doctor called Wouter Basson, to whom the racist government of apartheid had entrusted the mission to invent toxic substances which could kill the black people. And this Basson, in his huge lab, surrounded by barbed wires, had invented substances that they could put in chocolate and in cigarettes and in the beer that were sold in the black district of South Africa to kill the people. And he had never accepted to appear in front of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to ask for amnesty. He was put in trial, a trial which lasted 2 years with thousands of testimonies showing how guilty he had been. And strangely enough, you know, he was acquitted for lack of proofs, which is absolutely unbelievable. But today, this Dr. Wouter Basson, a cardiologist, lives, I think, surrounded by an army of bodyguards, but he continues to practice his cardiology near Pretoria.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We'll speak next with Shirley in Dallas. Hello, Shirley.
Hi, good morning. It's absolutely wonderful. I do adore your program.
Thank you.
I would like to congratulate Mr. Dominic. I'm not very good at surnames. I'm a 75-year-old.
Thank you, Shirley. Thank you.
Hi, I'm so
I hope glad. You will read the book quickly.
I will.
And you know that reading one book, buying one book, you helped me to give food to 10 leopard children for 1 week in the slums of Africa.
That is so fantastic. And you know, Mr. Dominic, I'm a 75-year-old visitor to Texas, to Dallas. I want to congratulate you on your talk. It's been so fair and just. And I wanted also to say that you mentioned the enormity of Mandela's heart. And
yeah,
on behalf of the peoples of South Africa, I would like you to, I would just like to say that there is an enormity of heart in every single phase, color, and culture of our people. It doesn't matter.
You are absolutely right, Shirley. And this is one thing that has really amazed me, mesmerized me all during my research to write A Rainbow in the Night, was the courage of the people, the capacity to reconciliate, their capacity to invent a new future which would exclude bloodbaths and all those things that we hear about, you know, in so many parts of the world.
So do you think that, I mean, it is interesting that certainly by law, racism is now illegal in South Africa. But can you explain to me, it seems hard to believe that people who had been trained for so many years to not trust the other side, in the case of whites, to feel they were superior to the other side, how that can just dissolve that quickly, or there must be remnants of something.
Well, Chris, I don't know. I don't think that it has dissolved, but the conditions for this supremacy have disappeared. I mean, when you live in a time where there is 1,750 laws which separate you from the majority of the people, and where you feel really your supremacy, when this supremacy has disappeared, you have somehow to understand that you are equal to the other people of the other color. And I've seen, you know, cases of friendships being born, cases really of I don't want to say that it's all beautiful and simple. I'm sure that for many of the white people who were in a supremacist state over the blacks, it must have been difficult from one day to the other to change status. But thanks to Mandela at the time, Mandela spoke to the white people. And at the time when really South Africa was becoming an independent nation, he would say to them, we need you. You know more than we know, us blacks. So please stay here. This is your home. You have to lead us and help us create one rainbow nation. I mean, when you read those speeches of Mandela, you have tears in your eyes. I state some of them in my book, A Rainbow in the Nation, because I think they are absolutely beautiful. But, you know, I have dedicated A Rainbow in the Nation to Ellen Liberman, this white woman who, at the peril of her life, helped so many black children. To Ellen Liberman and to all those whites, blacks and coloreds who put an end to the apartheid oppression and brought about the triumph of freedom, unity, truth and reconciliation. Never for a writer have I had the honor to dedicate a book to such fantastic people.
Dominic, what needs to happen now to help South Africa move past the problems it has with poverty and with disease?
Well, I think we should be attentive. I think that one of the things which is very important is that the 20% of South Africans who today are infected with the HIV virus could have access to the therapy, to the treatments that could that can preserve their lives. And it's not always the case because those therapies are expensive. And for the children now in South Africa, they must receive an education concerning AIDS and all those that think that we can help them towards this goal. Unfortunately, after Nelson Mandela, the president that succeeded Mandela was not, let's say, of the same standard, the same level. And some of the things that Nelson Mandela had achieved were more or less left in disarray or abandoned with the new president. But maybe today, you know, at the occasion of this World Football Cup, when those South Africans realize that the whole world is watching them, I think they are going to build a new cement of their nation to tell the world we are a great people.
What does South Africa's story say about humanity as a whole?
About whom?
About
what?
Humanity as a whole, all of humankind.
Well, it says that we can reconciliate, all of us. And this is a lesson, you know, for I know very well the state of Israel and Palestine because I wrote a book called O Jerusalem, which is considered as the only really impartial book on that subject. The lesson of South Africa could be applied to this part of the world if only perhaps there would be a leader of the dimension of Nelson Mandela with a vision for the future and with, above all, a desire to create there also a rainbow nation.
So you are optimistic for the future of South Africa?
I am optimistic, absolutely. In the 3 years of my research, I have learned how to love the people of South Africa. And this rainbow in the night that I've written with my guts, with my heart, and also with my extensive research, I think is a lesson for the world.
Dominic LaPierre is a journalist and philanthropist. You can learn more about his nonprofit organization by visiting online cityofjoyaid.org. The new book is called A Rainbow in the Night, The Tumultuous Birth of South Africa. Dominic, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you very much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure for me. I love Texas, and I salute all your listeners, and I wish them a great reading with A Rainbow in the Night.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.